Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories coming up on today's program. Pope Benedict has released a letter in which he responds to criticisms over his lifting of the excommunications of four traditionalist bishops, including one who denies the Holocaust. Bishops from around the world gather in the Vatican to discuss how the Church is facing the challenge of new media technologies. And men and women religious are calling for a new focus on fair trade this Lent to help alleviate the problems of poverty around the globe. Pope Benedict has released a letter in which he responds to criticisms over his lifting of the excommunications of four traditionalist bishops, including one who denies the Holocaust. In his letter, the Pope admits the affair was mishandled and says some problems could have been foreseen if the Vatican had made more use of the Internet. Chris Altieri reports.
Widespread misconceptions regarding Pope Benedict XVI's decision to lift the two-decade-old excommunications against four illicitly ordained bishops of the Priestly Society of St. Pius X created great controversy beginning in January when, just days before their announcement, one of the four appeared on Swedish television and made remarks trivializing the Holocaust and denying the existence of Nazi gas chambers. In his letter to the world's bishops, the Pope explains that the Williamson case took him by surprise and made his discreet act of mercy undertaken for the internal discipline of the Church as part of his mission to preserve and pursue Christian unity suddenly to appear as the repudiation of reconciliation among Christians and Jews. The Holy Father goes on to deplore this development in the strongest possible terms, to recall that the Pope's own theological work has always been in the service of greater reconciliation among Christians and Jews, and that he remains committed to the task of reconciliation. Pope Benedict also acknowledges that consulting information available on the Internet would have made it possible to perceive the problem early on. I have learned the lesson, writes Pope Benedict, that in the future in the Holy See we will have to pay greater attention to that source of news. The letter also clarifies that the lifting of the excommunications in no way constitutes a rehabilitation of the bishops, nor does it confer legitimate ecclesiastical office upon them. It further recognizes that greater clarity on these points could have helped avoid the confusion that erupted in the wake of the initial announcement.
Per quanto riguarda la situazione dell'istituzione Fraternità San Pio X, la questione è diversa.
In remarks to reporters on Thursday, the head of the Holy See's press office, Jesuit Father Federico Lombardi, stressed that doctrinal issues regarding the Church's teaching in and after the Second Vatican Council remain between the Holy See and the SSPX. As long as they persist, he said, the Priestly Society of St. Pius X will not have any canonical status, and its ministers will exercise no legitimate ministry within the Church. In this connection, Father Lombardi also explained the provision in the letter of placing the Pontifical Commission Ecclesia Dei, which is responsible for the conduct of negotiations with the SSPX, under the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Regarding the spirit of the letter, Father Lombardi said, it is only through mutual conversion to the gospel that we can hope to overcome divisions and continue on the path to unity. I'm Chris Altieri.
The Pope's letter has received positive feedback from bishops around the world. Here's the reaction from Leo Cornelio, Bishop of Bhopal in India.
In the Church, you see, there is a long history of excommunications or sanctions. But these are not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is that the person should repent and come back. And then once the Church or the authorities realize that it is sufficient time now to somehow or other see it from a different perspective, the whole matter, one could rescind or take back that sanction. So the Pope has acted from that angle due to compassion and reconciliation. because that is the church's goal, compassion, concern for the person. A sinner is not to be condemned, but always the Lord wants that the sinner be saved and come to the knowledge of truth, come back to God. I think that's the right step the Pope has taken, I would say.
That was Bishop Leo Cornelio of Bhopal in India. And now over to Philippa Hitchin, who presents the rest of today's programme.
The challenging new world of digital media technologies is the subject of a seminar being organised this week by the Vatican's Council for Social Communications for bishops in countries all around the world. The title of the meeting, which concludes on Friday, is New Perspectives on Church Communication, offering theological, pastoral and practical considerations on the new technologies and the way that they are radically altering the whole culture of communication. One of the main aims of the meeting is to come up with new guidelines on this complex issue to update the 1992 Vatican document Aetatis Novae, which looks at the early impact of internet technology on the Church's life and mission. Archbishop Claudio Celli heads the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, which is organising the seminar. He told me more about the aims and the focus of this course for church leaders in countries around the world.
The seminar is having the presence of 82, I would say, bishops, coming from 82 countries, representing the realities, the different aspects of their countries, and about the presence of the Church in the field of the mass media. The goal of this seminar is simple. We invited the bishops to see what happens in the field of the new technologies, and so to have a clear, definite perception what is going on. And the second aspect of the seminar will be a theological and pastoral analysis of the different problems. And the third point is to define some pastoral guidelines for the future. Our idea is to reach the redaction of the new document, which is going to substitute Aetatis Novae. Aetatis Novae is 1992. And so the new technologies are creating new perspectives today. And so I think that it's time to have a new document indicating to the Church some pastoral guidelines in the field of the mass media. You know, I think that the main aspect here is that the new technologies are not only an instrument, a sophisticated instrument, but the new technologies are creative of a new culture, what we can call a digital culture. You know, people of my age, we have some difficulties to understand this. But the young generations, they perceive it quite clearly. Is present a new culture. And the problem, the quick question for the Church is how to enter in a constructive dialogue with such a culture.
It's true that you have bishops from these countries all over the world, and in some areas these cultures are much more advanced, this digital culture is much more advanced than others. How do you deal with this particular challenge?
But the idea is this, that it's good that the bishops can start to understand each other, can perceive the problems that are facing. And so I think that this interchange among the bishops, the problems that they are facing, it is true, for example, the bishops coming from Europe are facing different problems from the bishops coming from Africa, for example. I'm very pleased because to have 82 countries represented, it means that we are really having a wide, rich experience. And I would say that the process is quite balanced, because we have 23 people coming from Europe, 23, 24 coming from Africa, the same more or less from Latin America. And so I would say that the major countries are present here. And so I like it, because in this informal and pastoral sharing, I think that new problems, new aspects, new perspectives can emerge. And I hope this.
The Vatican itself has been under criticism recently for what has been described as very confusing and ineffective communications. Are you going to be dealing with this at all? And how do you really face this challenge right at the heart of the Church?
I tell you honestly, this is not a matter of this seminar. Also, if one afternoon is dedicated to the Vatican media, but it's not a problem considered by this seminar. We know that we were facing some difficulties. Giving an answer to some Austrian journalists a few days ago who were posing me some questions, delicate questions about this matter, I was answering in a simple way, but at least in this field we are quite evangelical. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. People were smiling, and they understood that also inside the Holy See we can have some difficulties. You know, life is complicated, and the new technologies sometimes also are increasing the limits, the effects. We will see. We hope that our Lord will help us also in this field.
You're urging churches, local churches, to become much more interactive in their dealings with the media.
It's true. You know, the Holy See is not in a position to have an interactive role. You can imagine. We could receive every day hundreds of thousands of messages, and really it would be impossible to give a proper answer. But the local church, really they can find a way. We were inviting the bishops to have a dialogical attitude via internet with their own people. And they can make it. It's not easy, but we must start. So we are inviting the bishops to have such a new attitude with the website, not only to give informations, but to install really a real dialogue of life.
New attitude, but also new resources, a new emphasis, perhaps.
Yes. Sure. I realized with the bishops in visit at Limina that bishops perceive this. And I think that now this seminar will present to us such a new dimension. We hope so.
Thanks there to Archbishop Claudio Celi, head of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. Religious men and women concerned with world poverty have drawn up a suggested shopping list for their brothers and sisters during this season of Lent, a list featuring, above all, fair trade products such as tea, coffee, sugar or chocolate. Rather than just worrying about the huge problems in the poorest countries of the world, the Justice and Peace Commission of the Union of Superiors General is urging all religious to make a significant difference in the life of a poor person this Lent by simply switching to fair trade products that guarantee a fair price for the growers and producers in developing countries. This gesture, their statement says, becomes a witness which can influence and encourage other brothers and sisters to do the same. But just how can the purchase of fair trade goods make a real difference to the lives of the poor? And why have these religious decided to focus on this issue for Lent? A question my colleague Tracy McClure put to two justice and peace promoters, Dominican Sister Tony Harris and Marist Father Paul Frechette.
On Ash Wednesday, we heard from Matthew's Gospel, where Matthew outlines for us three traditional Lenten ways to practice our faith: almsgiving, prayer, and fasting. And I would place almsgiving, fair trade, in that category. So it would be in the category of charity, though some could make a good argument that fair trade is really also injustice. But we'll save that for the next visit, Tracy.
Okay. All right, but what is fair trade? Can anybody give me a very good, you know, concise explanation of what it is?
Well, fair trade is a term that's become fairly more well-known, I think, since the late 80s. And it describes an effort to assure that the people who produce goods are given a fair price for their goods and some kind of a stable price for their goods. For example, people who produce coffee are often victims of the market that can be controlled by forces far removed from their countries. But fair trade organizations and fair trade systems have tried to create connections between local producers and ways of distributing their products so that they are not the ones who in the cycle of distribution are the people who actually receive the least for the product. So whether it's actual products like coffee and tea, which are some of the more popular, or even products that are more craft or artisan kind of products, textile products, the effort is to move the product right to the point of distribution or sale and remove some of the steps in between that both take away from the producer and also basically, as I said, because of the market, make the prices that they might get for their products more unstable.
Right. Well, many of the fair trade products that we see in some of the small shops and so on here in Rome are coming from Africa, they're coming from Asia, they're coming from South America. What sort of products are these that we're seeing? You said artisan products, coffee, tea, but what might be some other products?
Well, there'd be chocolate, cocoa, like from Ghana, from Africa. There'd be tea from India. There's honey. There's juices, there's wines, and these prices with these items I just mentioned are pretty comparative. The prices have been coming down a little bit, but where the fair trade products are not comparative would be in jams and jellies. The multinationals still have a
monopoly on
yes.
that. But I was going to ask you, you know, many people do look at the fair trade products almost as a luxury product, and they say, oh boy, these prices are a little bit out of my range. I mean, is that always the case, though?
Yes and no. Yes, with the jams and jellies, but with the coffees and teas, the prices have become a bit comparative now. So much so that even people like Nestle's and Starbucks coffee are doing maybe 10% of their coffee from the fair trade industry. And we'd like to see that go up.
Mm. In these times of global economic crisis, why should I be willing to pay a bit more? Why should I want to pay more?
Well, I think as a commitment to solidarity in the world, particularly those of us who are in the Christian faith tradition, with some belief that the other people in the world are, in fact, our sisters and brothers, our decisions about the food we eat, the clothes we wear, all of the things we purchase, we know more and more have an impact on the wider global community. So what we've pointed out is that a lot of times religious communities or families designate some of their family income, even in hard times, for charity. And we could encourage people and encourage organizations to see the little extra they might have to pay for some of these products as part of that portion of their income that they're willing to spend for charity or for other kinds of activities that they might contribute to. So it's a little bit more, but it has implications, I think, not only fair trade, but even the stores and the markets that we purchase other things from. You know, those decisions are increasingly more significant for producers everywhere.
Now, I know that you are encouraging other religious orders, especially here in Rome, to participate in a special Lenten initiative this year. How does it work, Father Paul?
We begin with a booklet that has been sent out to 400 generalates here in Rome. It's about 400 generalates. And it's there are three goals, if you want. One is just to inform the generalates in Rome that there are at least 20 sites, 20 shops, fair trade shops in Rome. And in the booklet, we highlight 10. Secondly, we give some examples in the booklet of what religious are doing with fair trade around the globe. One example in Ireland, another example in South America, another example in the U.S., and then thirdly, there is some information, some questions and answers about the fair trade movement. And we're asking the generalates during Lent to take a look at it. This is one option. We're not being bullies and saying this is the option. I read recently that there was a story in a paper, in a Catholic paper in Great Britain, that one parish priest was very gung-ho and was insisting that this is the way to go. It's the only way. We're saying this is an option. Many of our houses have a 5% budget item for charity, and we're suggesting that this is a good option for charity. And we would like to hear from our audience any experiences that they have. The three stores that I visit on a regular basis, the people are very friendly. Of course, the language is Italian, but some of them speak English, some French. They're an international group, and some of them are volunteers, and they see this as a justice effort themselves. Interesting, one of the stores in Piazza Bologna, they'll actually do deliveries to the house if the purchase is more than 200 euro at a purchase, which is a lot, granted. What I'm trying to do is do a joint delivery with two other general houses that are neighbors to us.
Why is it important that these big religious communities participate in a project like this?
It's important that religious communities, religious houses, consider this as a possible option, because there are, in many of these houses, large communities, and so there are a lot of large purchases that someone's benefiting from. So if communities are able to redirect even a portion of their purchasing power, their economic power, to support fair trade, it could have a big impact and hopefully might influence members of the congregation in other parts of the world, in other countries. Can certainly perhaps be something than an activity that's just for Lent, but that in fact, as one of the purposes of Lent, that we make some changes, some permanent changes in our behavior, hopefully for the good, this might become a permanent change for communities. in terms of the way they purchase some products. And as Father Paul mentioned, there are food products, but religious communities also have jubilees and special celebrations. And considering getting fair trade craft or art pieces for those kinds of events is another way to support the other part of fair trade products.
And then just to build on that, religious do have economic power. I think we maybe take it for granted. But when you look at our ministries, the focus for this Lenten campaign is here in Rome, the General Houses. But even looking out into the world, our ministries of schools and parishes and hospitals, these are other opportunities. But that's if the leadership accepts the idea and gives the witness value as well. Huh?
One last question. Is there any way that fair trade could affect relations between countries on a global level? Is it such a small initiative that it can't really make a difference?
Well, one of the things that I think about in relation to a question like that is that if, in fact, economic markets are more stable for people in countries that we call developing, whether that's a fair term or not, but developing countries where people are struggling to basically feed themselves and take care of their families. One of the effects, I think, that eases some tensions is that I believe that most people really want to stay in their countries of origin and work and live and raise their families. They want to be where their roots are, where their families are, where their cultures are respected and active. And if
so, you're saying that it will affect immigration.
It could
eventually
affect immigration, mm-hmm, if people, in fact, as we were reading about these folks in Ghana now who can actually work and have some kind of stable income. Those are implications, I think, for stabilizing economies in the world and reducing some of the tension that the mass movement for immigration of people who basically want to feed themselves and their families, and so they go looking for a better life, like many of our ancestors did as well.
Thanks there to Dominican Sister Toni Harris and Marist Father Paul Frechette, speaking to my colleague Tracy McClure. And that brings us to the end of today's program. Thank you for joining me, Philippa Hitchin. Don't forget, you can hear another edition of our English feature program at this same time tomorrow. And you can find all our news and feature programs on the internet. Just look us up at www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus. Mm-hmm.